This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, a podcast I'm very much looking forward to because today we're going to cover a very controversial topic. It's kind of the third rail of medicine. And no, we're not talking about marijuana legalization. We're not talking about sex reassignment surgery. Those are controversies in their own right. We're talking about vaccination. The arguments run hot and heavy on both sides of this issue. And today we've invited an expert who's just written a book. It's out just this month. It's entitled Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illness. He's Dr. Thomas Cowan. He's an MD. He's studied and written about many subjects in medicine, including nutrition, anthroposophical medicine, which he's trained, and herbal medicine. He is the principal author of The Fourfold Path to Healing and co-author with Sally Fallon, who's been a guest here on Intelligent Medicine. You know her from Nourishing Traditions, and the Weston A. Price Foundation. Dr. Cowan has also served as a founding board member of the Price Foundation, and so is a believer in diet, obviously, as a means to achieving health. And he has been called upon to lecture throughout the United States and Canada. He's got three grown children. He practices medicine in San Francisco. And so it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Congratulations on the new book. It's a really quite comprehensive discussion of the vaccine issue.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So the contention here, the changing nature of childhood illness. Now, what are we talking about here? How has the nature of childhood diseases changed since the introduction of vaccines? And is it coincidental or is it causation?
I think it's causation, I guess. I don't know if it's the only cause, but I often describe it to my patients that, and I don't know how old you are, but in my early 60s, when I think back to my elementary school, I can remember one child in all the grades that I knew of who had a chronic illness. And that was a little child with asthma. And I remember that we made fun of him because he had to take an inhaler. And I'm not proud of, I don't think I was one of the ones who made fun of him, but it was just because it was so shocking for somebody to have to take medicine in order to have a sort of normal life.
And we didn't have peanut-free zones. You know, I'm of a comparable age, but we didn't have peanut-free zones. We didn't have a prohibition on, you know, certain types of baked goods. You know, we didn't have all kinds of dispensations for kids with attention deficit disorder. And autism was, I mean, virtually unknown. And when I was a child.
Right. Right. The first case of autism was 1937 by actually a pediatrician's child. So we go from that to, you know, there's various estimates, but, you know, like 1 in 30 to 40 children have autism. About 1 in 12 have ADD. There's 40% of the children in the Detroit public schools have some sort of diagnosis of a chronic disease. And, it isn't like we had great diets or anything either growing up. You know, we mostly ate frozen food and, you know, whatever else was happening in the 50s and 60s.
Hostess so, Twinkies mostly is what I subsisted
Hostess
on.
Hostess Twinkies is what I grew up on and licorice. So it wasn't due to great diet, but it was due to something. There has been a dramatic change. There was no, you know, there was no children with Crohn's disease that anybody spoke of. There was hardly rheumatoid arthritis, peanut allergies, neurodevelopmental problems, all these things. There has been a vast change in the health situation of the children in the last 50 years. Now, of course, a lot has happened in the 50 years, and you could bring on 10 people into your show, and one would talk about, glyphosate poisoning and, you know, radiation from cell phones and EMFs, and there's a whole lot of factors in here. But if you just look at just the basic, immunology that we all learned in medical school, and most people, I think, could and should be aware of, it's not hard to understand the pattern here. And if you would like, I can just give you the immunology 101 for your listeners so that they can understand just the predictable nature of how this came about.
Another way of putting it is what's the difference between natural immunity that's acquired by kids getting sick and recovering and vaccine-induced immunity?
Exactly. That is exactly the question. So if you take a disease like chickenpox or measles, natural immunity means, so people talk about their immune system, but there's at least two very distinct and separate immune systems. One is called the cell-mediated and the other is called the humoral. And the basic way it works is that when you encounter a virus, let's say chickenpox, that you've never been exposed to before, that virus gets in and infects, thousands, maybe even millions of cells, particularly in the respiratory tract. And so you have all these cells that are infected with virus, and the body calls in the cell-mediated reaction, which means the white blood cells, to essentially digest and excrete those infected cells. So that phase usually takes about a week, sometimes maybe 10 days, and the child is sick during that period. The reason they're sick is because the body is basically digesting infected cells and excreting them through the elimination channels, which includes the skin and the mucus and coughing and all that.
I've heard it said that it's not necessarily the bacteria or the viruses that cause you to experience the malaise. It's actually the activation of your immune system that makes you feel tired and achy and sick.
Exactly. In fact, that's a big point of my book, is it's not the microorganism that makes you sick. It's the microorganism that is one of the possible stimulants towards the activation of the cell-mediated immunity. And the question is, how do I know that? And the reason I know that is because you can infect somebody with a virus like chickenpox, and if you stop the cell-mediated immunity with a strong dose of prednisone, the child will not be, quote, sick. Mm-hmm. They could even die from the infection, but they won't be sick. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you can just preferentially and selectively stimulate a cell-mediated response, no microorganism needed, and the person will be sick. So in other words, being sick in what we call, a person is sick with a cold and a flu or whatever, mucus, fever, all those things, those are all manifestations of the activity of the cell-mediated immune system. And the purpose of that is to eliminate foreign unwanted debris, and that debris could be infected cells, it could be microorganisms, it could be toxins, it could be a whole lot of other things. So that's the cell-mediated immune response. It happens with every naturally occurring viral disease, and then it goes for about 10 days, and then you become, infected cell-free. Now, the body doesn't want to keep doing that over and over again, so it has a second arm, which essentially is a follow-up, and that's called the humoral or antibody-mediated immune system. And that system tags one of the proteins of the virus and makes antibodies to it and essentially stores it in its memory. Mm-hmm. So that if that same virus, like the chickenpox virus, is ever encountered again, there will be a reaction to eliminate it before it infects the cells. And so before any cell-mediated reaction needs to become activated, and the upshot of that is the person will never be sick again from chickenpox. Now, when the two work together, that's an incredibly foolproof and reliable system. And to the point where it's extremely unusual for somebody to get chickenpox or measles or mumps twice in their life. It basically just never happens. Because if you go through both stages of cell-mediated and humoral, you're basically immune for life. So that's natural immunity. Now, at some point, essentially the doctors or pharmaceutical whatever or somebody decided, well, we don't want the cell-mediated part anymore because that's the part that's making people sick and even sometimes killing them. So what we're going to do here is bypass the cell-mediated immune system and just stimulate a antibody, a humoral response. And since that's the part that keeps us from getting the infection again, we will also confer a lifelong immunity to the people who have a antibody response. So again, the purpose of the vaccine, the theory of the vaccine, is to not stimulate a cell-mediated response, but rather to stimulate an antibody response with the theory that that's the part that keeps you from getting the infection again, and so you will also have lifelong immunity. In fact, clearly, if you go back to the 50s and 60s, with vaccines like measles, we were told that one measles shot would confer lifelong immunity. That's what we were told, even though we were bypassing the cell-mediated reaction. So that was basically the theory of the vaccine. So one involves both, and the other just involves the antibodies. Now, in the subsequent 40 or 50 years, we know two things. One is that you never get lifelong immunity without the cell-mediated reaction being involved. And the proof of that is very simple. That's why we give boosters. You know, in the beginning, we were told we just needed one measles shot, and now you need them at age, I guess, 12 and 18 or when you go to college because it wears off. It turns out the antibody response only lasts maybe 7 to 10 years with the first injection and maybe 3 years with subsequent boosters, and then even less and less as time goes on.
It's a little bit of a bait and switch, right?
Right. So that paradoxically, we have a bunch of adults who are no longer immune to measles because they never had natural measles and their immunity is worn off because the vaccines don't confer lifelong immunity. So that's one issue. And so there's a susceptibility in the fact that you will never achieve herd immunity that way, so-called herd immunity, because you're always going to have the vaccine wearing off and most of the population being susceptible.
Okay, folks, let's pause now to allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Thomas Cowan. Well, let's talk about that concept of herd immunity for a moment, because that's really one of the major arguments that buttresses campaigns for universal vaccination, which is that we can eradicate disease by treating everyone. So I say the ideal vaccine program is for me or my child or my grandchild not to take any vaccines, but to assure that every other man, woman, and child in the U.S. gets shots against everything, and then all diseases will be eradicated, and you get the best of both worlds. You don't get the harmful effects of the vaccines, but everybody else is not going to be carrying stuff. So isn't that an argument that supports vaccination? Certainly the messaging behind the people who promote vaccination.
Well, certainly the message, but it's an illusion. It's an illusion because that isn't why we have less death or disability from vaccinatable diseases. That all happened. If you look at a chart of mortality rate from measles, for instance, from 1900 until 2010, you can see that the drop was about 99%. Between 1900 and 1963, and it was the measles vaccine was introduced in 1963.
So you're saying the drop preceded the introduction of the vaccine. It was already trending down anyway.
Yes, with all of the vaccinatable diseases, mm-hmm. all of them. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is look at the CDC numbers on mortality from infectious disease in the 20th century. And it's clear that approximately 95 to 99% of the mortality dropped before the vaccines were introduced. So anybody who's really honestly looking into why do people die less of infectious disease, it can't possibly be the vaccines, because the vaccines had no discernible impact on this. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. And the fact that because the immunity from vaccines wear off, you know, maximum 10 years, so we have at least 50% of the population at any one time for any of the vaccinatable diseases is not immune. And so on the other hand, we're told that you have to have 90% population immunity in order to have herd immunity. That can't possibly be the reason why we have less deaths from measles or any other vaccinating disease, because we never had herd immunity and we never will have herd immunity. Because in order to have herd immunity, you would have to keep vaccinating adults every 3 years mm-hmm. with measles and mumps and chickenpox and mm-hmm. all the rest, which is never going to be possible, because the toxicity of the vaccine will make it so that will never be a reasonable policy.
Is that the reason for the seeming comeback of old diseases like measles and whooping cough, which is often cited as an indictment of vaccine refuseniks? You know, more and more, especially upscale, holistically oriented parents are withholding some vaccines from kids or delaying vaccines, and it's thought that gap in the vaccination profile is causing these old diseases to come back. Are you saying that it wouldn't make a difference even if we had 100% coverage and compliance with vaccine schedules?
I'm not saying that vaccines don't confer a temporary immunity. They certainly do produce a temporary rise in antibodies. But if you look at, you know, and it depends a little about which disease you're talking about. For instance, when they change from the acellular pertussis vaccine, that's now known that doesn't confer, it doesn't stop the ability to transmit the disease. So there's no transmission effect, decreasing effect.
You won't get pertussis or whooping cough, but you still can be a carrier and pass it on to someone else.
Exactly. Okay. And that's why it usually at least 50% and sometimes even up to 80% of the children in these so-called whooping cough outbreaks or measles outbreaks, they have been fully vaccinated, but it apparently didn't work. So it's not because of people not vaccinating. That's not the reason why there's very few, you know, I mean, there's maybe a few minor outbreaks, but it's not very much. But the point, the biggest point here is when you go back to my model of how the immune system works, because ultimately my point is, even if you have less whooping cough, even if you have less measles, and I'm not necessarily saying less deaths from measles, because the deaths from measles was essentially eradicated from the United States, at least, before there was a vaccine. But you certainly have less children getting measles. So the real question is, does that mean the children are healthier? Mm-hmm. And does that mean they're now disease-free because they have less measles? Mm-hmm. And again, there's a distinction between having measles and dying from measles. The dying from measles part was already taken care of before the vaccines. Mm-hmm. The bad outcomes from measles was already taken care of before vaccines. It's now the question of what is the health of the mm-hmm. children who have minor measles versus the health of children who have vaccines in order so that they don't have minor cases of measles.
But, you know, Dr. Cowan, I treat adults. But when I take a medical history of an adult, I have this medical abbreviation that you're well familiar with. Our audience probably isn't. It's UDCH or UDC. It's a quick shorthand for usual diseases of childhood. You know, when you're taking a medical history, you said, have you had this? Have you had that? And then you write, you know, UDCH or UDC, usual diseases of childhood. Is it important for kids to get sick from time to time? Does it act kind of as a boot camp for the immune system to allow the immune system to function normally?
Well, my answer would be yes. And the research answer is also yes. And there's a bunch of studies showing that children who have measles have less autoimmune disease, have less cancer, have less heart disease. And that's a sort of across the board with these childhood diseases that you're talking about. But getting back to my point is to how this comes about. You know, when we talk about these issues like autoimmune disease and peanut allergy and, atopic dermatitis and just allergies in general, these are all accelerated antibody situations, right? Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, the way we diagnose somebody with an autoimmune disease is we look for antibodies in their blood. So we have, 60 million people with elevated thyroid antibodies. It's called Hashimoto's. We have, I don't know how many million people with elevated rheumatoid factor, which is another antibody. So the question then is, how come we have all these people with increased antibody production, especially compared to their cell-mediated reactions? And I would contend, getting back to your original question, is there a causal relationship here? That the theory of the vaccine, you know, the whole vaccine theory is, I am going to stimulate you to make antibodies without a cell-mediated reaction, and at the end of the day, you're going to be in a heightened antibody production state, which is exactly the definition of what an autoimmune disease is. Hmm. So it doesn't seem like a theoretical stretch when you think of, well, how did those two things come about? How did we get this decreased cell-mediated reaction? Because we have pediatrics nowadays is essentially an assault on the cell-mediated reaction. Mm. We prevent it when it happens. We give antibiotics. We give antipyretics, fever-reducing medicines. We do everything we can to prevent people from exercising their cell-mediated reactions.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when you look at what a vaccine is, because when you put, you know, a part of a virus in saline and inject it into a person, you get nothing. You don't get an antibody reaction. So you have to put something called an adjuvant, which is typically aluminum, which stimulates the child to make an antibody reaction. But not only to the measles or the chickenpox or the pertussis part of the vaccine. It's a broad spectrum antibody producing stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they put them in there. Parents are always up in arms and say, why do you put this crap in the vaccines? Mm-hmm. Why do you put aluminum? Why do you put formaldehyde? Why do you put dead fetal cells in there? Why do you put thimerosal? Why do you put detergents? Why do you put this long list of 30 things in it? The reason is because if you don't put them in, the child doesn't make antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Measles in normal saline and you get no antibody reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to put them in. It's part of basic
So they're not merely preservatives. You know, some people say, why can't you use a safer preservative than mercury? I mean, it's been a long time since we've stopped putting iodine on or mercurochrome on kids' skinned knees. So why can't you stop using mercury? And mercury actually may be part of the secret sauce for why these vaccines take and actually cause the immune system to recognize subsequently the virus.
Exactly. They are broad spectrum antibody producing stimulants.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they use them. That's even the disingenuousness of saying, well, it's only a small dose. But obviously the dose is big enough that they put it in there.
You get a physiological reaction. Yeah. It's something, it's not inconsequential. Yeah, exactly.
Right. The milligrams is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're useful is the important point. The fact that they work. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can do studies and show if you put saline and measles, you'd get nothing.
Yeah.
So you put saline and aluminum in measles and you get an antibody reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get it, you know, approved. Because you've shown a temporary antibody reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Except if you look at the definition of an autoimmune disease or the fact, for instance, there's peanut proteins in some of the vaccines.
Mm.
So why do we have all these children who can't tolerate peanuts? Mm. Well, I would submit that if you put in a vaccine, if you inject somebody with, say, aluminum, which is a very potent stimulator of the antibody arm of the immune system, along with peanut protein, and you inject it into somebody, I mean, like, what do you think is going to happen?
You're going to make antibodies against peanuts.
It's the
self-same principle by which the body will react against a future viral onslaught, you know, with a powerful immune response. But that's inappropriate when it comes to peanuts. We don't want to see that. Okay, great. Let's pause because we've got lots to talk about, and I want to continue our discussion in part two. A very controversial subject. It's vaccination, and our guest, Dr. Thomas Cowan, has done a deep dive on that subject in a new book called Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illness. These are all out there, but we have more questions about what's appropriate in terms of vaccines. Are there alternatives in terms of vaccine schedules, in terms of ways in which we can protect our children from disease without 30 vaccines? We'll discuss that in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.